Okay, I'd like to call this meeting of House Resources to order, please. Today is April 21st, 2023. We are in the Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Wright, Representative McCabe, Representative Dibert, Representative Mears, and myself, Chairman McKay. We do have a quorum to do business. And we will be thanking the staff, Justin, Zach, and Committee 8, Ed King, for helping us today. And please silence your cell phones. So there are two items on today's agenda. First up is House Bill 143, which is related to advanced recycling. I will now bring House Bill 143 back before the committee. My goal, let the record show that we've been joined by Representative Sadler. My goal for today is to take public and invited testimony, set an amendment deadline, and set the bill aside. Let's start with public testimony. Public testimony on House Bill 143 is now open. Does anybody in the room wish to testify? And I will now open public testimony for anyone online. We have no one online? We do? No? Okay. Staff assures me that there's no one online to testify. So I will now close public testimony on House Bill 143. So seeing no one else wishing to testify, public testimony is now closed. I would like to invite the Department of Environmental Conservation to the table to give, or they're going to be on online, excuse me, to give their comments on House Bill 143. So Deputy Commissioner Pocan, can you hear me okay?
Thank you, Chairman. I can hear you.
Okay. Please state your name and your affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Emma Pocan. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation for the record. Thank you. First, I wanted to note that we certainly support recycling for a lot of reasons, including that it extends the life of our landfills. Recycling opportunities are somewhat limited in Alaska. However, there isn't currently an advanced recycling facility in the state, for example. But we certainly appreciate that simplifying and clarifying regulatory requirements can remove hurdles for new facilities interested in establishing operations in the state. Under current law, material that's discarded after its intended use is subject to regulation by DEC as a solid waste. And that includes material that might ultimately go to a recycling facility rather than a landfill. So if there's a desire to exempt plastics from the state definition of solid waste or otherwise exempt these type of advanced recycling facilities from DEC's solid waste regulatory program, modifications to our statutes would be needed, modifications like those provided by House Bill 143. I also want to note in particular the important impact of Section 1 of House Bill 143. That section affirms DEC's existing authorities and responsibilities to permit air emissions and water discharges from a facility in the state. While that affirmation doesn't change DEC's existing authority on the air and water front, in the context of a bill that exempts from facilities from other DEC requirements, and that includes changes to some broadly applicable definitions, that explicit language provides some really helpful clarity. In general, DEC hasn't identified any issues with the current version of House Bill 143, but we'll continue to monitor the legislation as it moves through the process. Thank you, Chairman, and I can be available for any questions if you would like.
Okay, thank you, Deputy Commissioner Pocan. I want to announce that Representative Armstrong has joined us by Teams. Representative Armstrong, can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, good. Did you get on in time to hear Commissioner Pocan's testimony?
I did, yes. I've been on since the beginning.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Please let us know if you lose your connection, and we're glad to have you here with us today. Okay, so Deputy Commissioner Pocan will stay on the line for questions. At this point, are there any questions for Commissioner Pocan?
Yes,
Okay, seeing none. Let's see here. So, Deputy Commissioner, thank you for your comments and assistance on this topic. Next, I'd like to invite Representative Mears to the presenter's table. As an individual with experience in the recycling industry, Representative Mears, I believe you may have some insight to share with us. On the line to assist in answering technical questions regarding advanced recycling is Craig Cookson, Senior Director of Plastics Sustainability for the American Chemistry Council. So are we ready? Brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record here in House Resources. Representative Armstrong, I want to make sure you have access to the slides.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Mears, please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. This is Representative Donna Mears, presenting invited testimony on House Bill 143. So thank you for the opportunity to get a little bit more in depth with this. I wanted to first off by recognizing the same things that the Deputy Commissioner and the staff recognized, and that there is quite a number of benefits for recycling. Landfill life, as you can see here, you know, Alaska's a beautiful place, and filling it up with landfills is not necessarily a thing, something we want to do. We are a resource state, and we do really great at taking useful things out of the land. And one of my career goals has been extracting the maximum value out of things before we put it back in the ground again. This also reduces greenhouse gas emissions, and it creates jobs, not just in the manufacturing or remanufacturing in the recycling process, but also with collection and transportation. There's quite a number of jobs that are made that way. I wanted to just touch briefly on what the solid waste and recycling landscape in Alaska looks like. The staff presentation showed a potential of almost 60,000 tons of material that would be able to be utilized for a process like this. How I wish that were the case. Alaska, as we know, is a very large, diverse state with much of it off the road system. In reality, a larger recycling operation would be mostly gaining materials from some of the large landfills along the road system if it was economic enough to transport. There are 9 active Class 1 landfills throughout the state. That's landfills that emplace more than 20 tons per day of material in the landfills. Anchorage is by far the largest. This is a very simplified presentation of data. I've been collecting data since 2004, and these numbers have actually remained fairly consistent. Municipal solid waste and construction demolition debris make up the material in our landfills. 20 to 30% of that is about construction demolition debris. The landfills handle this differently. Some are commingled, some handle them separately. But as you can see, there's only about 550,000 tons a year of landfill materials. When you look at the recycling operations, a generous number is 25 to 30,000 tons per year. The Anchorage Recycling Center itself does just over 20,000 tons per year of not just residential, but also sort of office materials, including cardboard. But when you look at residential recycling and one of the most comprehensive mechanisms we have is the curbside recycling system. So the curbside recycling, which is having a cart outside of homes with a truck going by and picking it up, is only picking up about 6,000 tons a year of commingled recycling. If we were to implement a new recycling stream to just gather plastics, that would, from my experience, be a drop-off program and have significantly less materials. We do a similar thing with glass recycling. Glass recycling isn't collected in the commingled curbside because it's a contaminant, and that program brings in about 1,200 to 1,400 tons of year of material that's dropped off. Of course, we know glass is far more dense than plastic, so I can't imagine a new recycling stream bringing in more than 1,000 tons a year. So we're not looking at millions of dollars of potential in our economy. We are not looking at having plants up here. In reality, if we start segregating this waste stream, it's something that would be backhauled to the lower 48. We don't even have critical mass for separating the 6,000 tons of commingled curbside here. That's all bundled together and sent to the lower 48. So I wanted to present this as the reality of what waste looks like in Alaska. This is something that I've spent a lot of time on and enjoy and get nerdy about. And I would love to have very nerdy about. And I would really love in the interim if there were other folks from the committee that would like to do a tour in Anchorage, and we can look at the landfill, some industrial and residential recycling operations, and look at backhaul. I would love to share that with the committee. But getting into the bill. As a deputy commissioner. Yes.
Representative Mears, looks like Representative Wright has a question.
To the chair, thank you, Chair. Just curious, what does TPD stand for?
Tons per day.
Tons per day. And TPY is ton per year?
Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Sorry for the acronyms.
No worries.
So getting into the bill, as the deputy commissioner mentioned, currently, the air emissions and water discharges are covered already by the Department of Environmental Conservation. Air emissions under 18 AAC 50 and water discharges under 18 AAC 72 and 83. That's both with wastewater disposal and APDES, which is stormwater. The current recycling operations and many other waste operations are covered, not specifically, but in general with these other regulations. So if there was a facility that was not storing any of their feedstocks properly or their finished material properly, and it was causing either air quality issues or water, stormwater issues, it would be covered already. The majority of the bill outside of the departmental powers gets into definitions, and I had some conversations with DEC on the meanings of these definitions, what's covered now and what's not covered now. The post-use polymers and recovered feedstocks, they don't fall under the current definition of industrial waste, so exempting them from that definition is unnecessary. And the same falls with the definition of other wastes. Things change, though, when we get to the definition of solid waste. If you modify the definition of solid waste to exclude materials that would be including this, you'd be exempting these materials from other parts of code. For example, 18 AAC 6010 is accumulation, storage, and treatment. A person may not store accumulated solid waste in a manner that causes litter violation, the attraction or access of domestic animals, wildlife, or disease vectors, a health hazard, polluted runoff, et cetera, et cetera. So Section 4 would exempt the materials from an advanced recycling facility from these other activities. So as our department partners would say, it's a policy call if you want to exempt things, but that does not seem like a good policy call to me.
Okay. Representative Sadler has a question.
Through the chair, Representative Mears, before you go on, you are, in fact, reading accurately the statutes and so forth. Could you kind of put it in real plain English so the folks listening back home can understand what is the effect of excluding post-use polymers and recovered feedstocks from the definition of solid waste, And please don't read the statutes, kind of tell people in colloquial terms, what does that mean? Why is that important?
It would mean that if there was an advanced recycling facility, if they were exempted from solid waste, it would mean they would be, if there was animals like bears attracted to their site, or if there was a health hazard from anything that they were doing on site, they would be exempted from regulation.
Okay, please continue.
Section 5 refers to solid waste disposal facility. An advanced recycling facility wouldn't be doing any disposal. Disposal facilities would be like medical waste incineration, and all the other applications would be landfilling of waste. So this section would be moot. Section 6 is the same as Section 4, that if we exclude advanced recycling from the definition of solid waste processing, it would be exempt from existing regulations and the rules that everyone else would have to follow.
I'm sorry, Representative Mears, can you kind of go through that one again? I'm not sure I'm following.
So solid waste processing, having advanced recycling, assuming that we're still continuing the feedstocks and polymers there as solid waste, if you exempt advanced recycling from solid waste processing, it would exempt advanced recycling from the rules that everyone else has to follow.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Sadler. And that's where I'm inviting you to try to, and so that's a real sterile, the phone is bureaucratic. What does that mean in practical terms? They'll be exempt from other regulations. So what? Why is that important? What's the effect? Please put some meat in that.
So solid waste processing, I didn't get as deep into this one, but as I was for the definitions of solid waste with the accumulation, storage, and treatment, but in a very similar way that those like transfer stations require all material to be removed from the site at the end of the day, or they need to be fenced, or they need to restrict access, or materials need to be covered. So any
solid waste does.
Right. So solid waste processing as well. So facilities that would do solid waste processing, this would be exempt from that.
So not to dig in too deep, Representative Mears, but those sound like amendments we could make to the bill to alleviate those concerns. Like we could put in there that, yeah, the loads all need to be covered, just like for the regular recycling, right? I don't quite follow why this is a showstopper. It's sort of like we could fix that. We could fix these discrepancies or whatever, weaknesses, right?
Right, but if you're going to exempt them from them, why would you reinstitute the restrictions?
Okay, maybe that needs to be taken out of the bill then.
Okay,
I'm just trying to understand, what we're trying to accomplish. Okay, please proceed.
Same. And then in Section 7, Sections 2 through 6 include a lot of new definitions that get spurred off of the definition of advanced recycling. If there is the desire from the committee to adopt any of the Sections 2 through 7, we really need to look more deeply into the definitions for at least these terms here. For example, recovered feedstock in the bill only refers to the materials in advanced recycling, but there's lots of other operations throughout the state that could utilize that definition, and so it would need to be expanded to practices and industries that already exist throughout the state. I didn't get deep into what these might need to include. One of the great things about folks at DEC is they've got a wide range of experience as regulators, and they have a lot more familiarity with facilities and processes throughout the state, and would really need their support in making these definitions whole.
Okay.
So in conclusion from my reading of this, many of the sections of the bill are already covered with existing regulations within the Department of Environmental Conservation. But sections 2 and 4 are particularly problematic because they preferentially exclude any...
For the record, I just want to make sure, 4 and 6, right?
Yes.
I just want to make sure the record, the two sections you're concerned with are 4 and 6.
Right. Most of the other sections are moot, but 4 and 6 would preferentially exempt advanced recycling from existing regulations. If any of the sections 2 through 6 are adopted by the committee, then there would need to be a deeper look at the other definitions that would need to be added.
Okay, I just want to make sure for the record that we had our numbers straight, that's all. Okay, any closing comments, Representative Mears? Okay. Does anyone have any questions for Representative Mears? Representative Dybert.
Thank you, to the chair. On the eve of Earth Day, I appreciate your presentation on recycling.
Thank you, Representative Dybert.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Mears. You can take your place at the committee table, and if I need you to answer questions, then we can probably just do it from there, or maybe you go back to the... Thank you.
Sure. I just want to ask you, the chair, if the engineer is going to send us a bill for your services, which would cost a lot of money in the private sector. Thank you.
Well, sorry, the state doesn't have any money, Representative Mears, so this is on the House.
Thank you, Representative Sadler, through the chair. I'm taking care of with my work here, and I will provide that as part of my legislative services.
Okay, so I think what I'd like to do is ask Deputy Commissioner Pocan, do you have a response to these comments? I guess I'll just leave it open to you to reply.
Thank you, Chairman McKay. As I said, we don't have any concerns with the current version of the bill, and do appreciate that there's that clarity in Section 1 that our air emission and water discharge regulatory authority would remain intact. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Sadler has a question.
Thank you. Through the Chairman, Mr. Boakson, sorry, missed the last name, sorry. To the woman who just spoke a second ago from DEC.
Pocan.
Deputy
Commissioner Pocan.
Deputy Commissioner Pocan. Oh, hello there. Hey, Pocan. I guess I'll ask a real pointed question. Representative Mears has said that the definitions are unnecessary in Section 2 and in Section 3. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Thank you, Representative Zabbard. For the record, this is Emma Pocan, Deputy Commissioner at DEC. So the definitions in Section 2 are of industrial waste, and in Section 4, you said, that is, Section 3 is for other waste. We don't have any concerns about or objections to those changes. I think that, covering that issue in all the definitions probably provides some clarity. I think the degree of clarity that the legislature would like to have in statute is up to you.
Follow up?
But I don't think it's problematic.
Okay.
And Commissioner Pocan, I understood you say we have no objection to those changes. I don't see any proposed changes. My question is, do you agree that the definitions are redundant, as Representative Muir said?
The chair, Representative Sadler, to my knowledge, those the purpose of the bill, as I understand it, could be accomplished with the changes only in the other sections. But I think that to the extent that there may be other uses of those terms, the clarity isn't harmful.
Ms. Pocan, through the chair.
Okay, go ahead, Representative
I'm a
Sadler.
Soul sometimes I like to hear yes or no sometimes. Is Representative Mears right that these are redundant? And that would a clear yes or no would be appreciated, please.
through the chair, Representative Sadler, my apologies. I sometimes talk as I'm speaking. So the simple yes or no is that I think it is possible that that language could be redundant. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a person on the line who would like to testify, so I'm going to reopen public testimony for this person. So we'll reopen public testimony. And Diane Chapman. Diane, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Please put your name on the record and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Awesome. Thank you so much. My name is Deanne Chapman. I'm a state director for Alaska Environment. And I want to just start off by saying that advanced recycling or chemical recycling is not an adequate solution to our plastic waste issue, and it's actually incredibly harmful to our environment. NREL, the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, recently did an analysis which concluded that using pyrolysis and gasification to produce plastic is between 10 and 100 times worse on environmental and economic metrics than virgin plastic, which I'm obviously not a fan of either. In advanced recycling processes, they emit toxic chemicals into the air, including chemicals known to cause cancer, fertility issues, birth defects, and other health problems. And the process is pretty energy intensive, so it either leads to increased greenhouse gas pollution if powered by fossil fuels, or is a waste of valuable energy and technology if powered by renewables. Chemical recycling is just unlikely to ever be economically viable, so any large-scale rollout would have to depend on government subsidies, and those subsidies could be used on things that provide actual societal value instead, including real solutions to the plastic crisis. And I've got a couple policy recommendations for the bill. The first, it's good that the bill clarifies that incineration does not count as advanced recycling. Regulations and definitions should clearly distinguish between plastic to fuel processes that turn plastic and plastics or in processes that turn plastics into new plastics. And the second is the bill seems to classify advanced recycling facilities as something other than waste handling facilities, that's what Rep. Mears is talking about. And this will allow them to skirt current environmental regulations, and it's a bad thing. There's a bunch of states that have unintentionally passed legislation that allowed this to happen. In the next, neither solvent-based nor plastic-to-fuel processes should be enabled to compete against less damaging forms of waste management, like mechanical recycling. And then final thing is that policymakers should compel companies to be transparent about pollution emitted by their facilities. So I'll wrap up by saying that proponents of advanced recycling misleadingly present it as part of a circular economy and a solution to the plastic crisis. And it's just not so. It's greenwashing. And nothing as environmentally nasty as this can be considered sustainable. So we do best to keep it out of our state and instead invest in real solutions for managing plastic waste.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. I will now close public testimony on HB 143. Let's see. Next we have I believe we have two folks from the industry, Craig Cookson and Lindsay Stovall on the line. Maybe ladies first. Lindsay, would you like to comment on what you've heard so far? And my staff, Trevor Jepson, is also available to answer questions. So, Lindsay, can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, please put yourself on the record, identify your affiliation, and begin your testimony, and we'd like to hear some response to the comments that have been made so far.
All right, well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I thank you for your time this afternoon. For the record, my name is Lindsay Stovall, and I am here today on behalf of the American Chemistry Council. By way of background, ACC is a national trade organization representing almost 200 global companies engaged in the chemical industry, including the leading manufacturers of plastic resins. I'm here today in support of House Bill 143, which would appropriately regulate advanced recycling as manufacturing. Increasing sustainability and reducing plastic waste are extremely important for our communities. This includes enabling innovation to drive recycling rates upward. Alaska and much of the U.S. have been able to mechanically recycle things like soda and water bottles, milk jugs, detergent bottles, and tubs and lids. However, it is challenging to mechanically recycle complexly engineered packaging, including food pouches, snack wrappers, and yogurt tubs. Additionally, economics, market demand, and recent restrictions in China have had a major impact. This is where innovation comes in. Instead of sending these valuable plastics to landfills or burning them for energy, technologies like advanced recycling, also commonly referred to as chemical recycling, can take these hard-to-recycle plastics and convert them into raw materials, produce new urban-equivalent plastics and products. These are truly circular, environmentally beneficial solutions that do not combust or burn plastic material. Some examples of how these technologies have been successfully implemented in the U.S. include Wendy's first example, which they have switched from their paper line drink cups to an all-plastic made with 20% recycled plastics into advanced recycling. Herbal Essences, which folks are familiar with, which is one of the highest profile brands of Procter & Gamble, is producing 5 shampoo and conditioner bottles made from 50% certified recycled plastic. And companies such as Warby Parker and Under Armour are bringing recycled material to the eyewear industry via advanced recycling. If Alaska converted just 50% of the currently landfill plastic stock in the state utilizing advanced recycling, it could generate over $70 million in economic output each year and up to 50 manufacturing jobs in the state. As manufacturing facilities, these technologies are also subject to federal, state, and local environmental regulations, including the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act. It is important to note that 24 other states have passed similar laws to ensure that technologies are regulated as manufacturing. Lastly, it is critical for advanced recycling companies looking to invest in the state that the technology will be properly regulated as manufacturing and that the products they produce count as recycling and toward future recycled content targets. Regulatory certainty is key for companies looking to site new facilities. AP 143 accomplishes these objectives and paves the way for Alaska to be a leader in reducing plastic waste. In closing, I would ask your support of House Bill 143 to help bring added investments and jobs to the state of Alaska while increasing recycling, conserving resources, and reducing plastic waste. With that, Mr. Chairman, I thank you for your time today. My colleague, Craig Cookson, Senior Director of Plastic Sustainability at ACC, is on the line and happy to respond to any questions members of the committee may have. Again, appreciate your time today.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Stovall. Mr. Cookson, would you like to make any comments today? Can you hear me okay?
I can. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my only response would be, and I'm happy to take questions, and again, I'm Craig Cookson. I'm the Senior Director of Plastic Sustainability at the American Chemistry Council. I've been to 10 different advanced recycling facilities in North America over the last 13 years. So I've seen a lot. I've been there to many over and over again. So I just had some issues with the previous testimony citing the NREL report. A couple clarifications on that report is, number one, in the very beginning of the report, they specified that they didn't really even look at pyrolysis or gasification technologies. They looked at some other technologies. Additionally, they didn't have any data from real operations in that study. The data comes from sources that are old as 1997. I think the most recent source in that study is 2018. And a much better source that has real data is Argonne National Laboratory, one of the crown jewels of the U.S. Department of Energy, published recently in their GREET model. That's a greenhouse gases regulated emissions and energy use and technology model, that when you take plastics and using a technology like pyrolysis, you take those plastics and you turn them into what's called a pyrolysis oil, and then you use that as a alternative feedstock to naphtha in the production of new chemicals and plastics again, that pyrolysis-derived naphtha is 27%, it has a 27% less greenhouse gas footprint than does virgin oil-derived naphtha. So, we can provide that to the committee, but I would say the NREL report is continually be miscited and mischaracterized for what it actually says.
Okay, very good, Mr. Cookson. I'd like to announce for the record that after a long time trying, Representative Rauscher has joined us on the phone. Welcome, Representative Rauscher. Are there any questions for Mr. Cookson? Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair, Mr. Cookson. Since you've been to facilities and seem to have some experience with this, what is the minimum amount of feedstock per year that would make a facility viable?
You know, that depends. There are facilities that are viable out there that are doing only 35, you know, to 50 tons per day. I'm not sure exactly what that is per year, but I'm calculating where I am right now. But certainly, you know, the key with, you know, there's different, you know, everybody has a different economic model on this. Some are thinking of creating large hubs and, you know, let's say taking plastics and shipping them to a hub. There's the other model, which is that it's cheaper to ship liquids or even use pipelines, which Alaska has to move liquids. So you have a smaller, more distributed model where the plastics are generated. You take the plastics, you turn them into, again, something like a pie oil, and then you use either rail or pipelines or, you know, freight to ship the liquids. But I would also argue with the last contention that this process is not economical. America's plastics makers, you know, our members and others have announced investments of over $7 billion here in the U.S. And as Lindsay mentioned, you know, large brands, everybody from Warby Parker with glasses, eyeglasses to Wendy's, are realizing and using advanced recycling to have ISCC, that's the International Sustainability and Carbon Certification, plus recycled plastics in their products and packaging, and that's thanks to advanced recycling. So this is, you know, this is really a key for circularity, especially as we look to, number one, how we take the heterogeneous mix of plastics that are not bottles, like polyethylene milk jugs and detergent bottles and PET water and soda bottles, but really the pouches, the films, the tubes, other types of plastics, and then turn those into a feedstock that can be used as a as an alternative to virgin oil and natural gas.
Okay, follow up, Representative Mears.
Thank you, sir, through the chair. So, if we're looking at you know, realistically having something on the order of 1,000 tons per year, if we had a really good program here in Alaska, wouldn't we better off shipping those products to more to facilities in the lower 48?
No, I don't think so. You know, again, I think that we have companies, I don't want to, you know, specify which ones, but they see that it's much cheaper to ship liquids than it is to ship plastic long distance. So the preference would be to produce a pile oil or some sort of liquid and ship that to either lower 48 or any sort of existing kind of refining assets that are in the region.
Representative Mears, follow up.
Thank you, through the chair. I think there's some aspects of Alaska that you're not familiar with, and part of that is that we bring more materials into the state than out, so we have a lot of opportunities for backhauling materials, and a lot of our more household-level recyclables get backhauled on what would otherwise be empty containers, the lower 48. So our ability to send unprocessed feedstock is pretty high here.
Yeah, through the chair, if I can answer that, is, you know, a few years ago, we were reliant on backhauling to China, you know, where you know, they would send over, you know, of course, many cargo ships filled with televisions and other products to the United States and have cargo ships going back empty. And we used to fill those with plastics, particularly what we call 3 through 7 bales, which are your, you know, your tubs and your lids and all your sort of odds and ends that are not your sort of number one or two bottles. And several years later, you know, back in 2017, China and really the rest of Southeast Asia said, you know, we don't really want your plastics anymore. And for a few years, we were kind of left with no homes for those plastics. And I think and that's kind of what's really spurred a lot of domestic investment, is recognizing the importance of domestic supply chains. So, you know, so I think I would sort of say to the, you know, the entire committee is, you know, it's important to think about how you create that supply chain within your own state.
Okay, I think it's important to note that we're not necessarily approving an advanced recycling project to start in Alaska next month. We're just laying the legal framework that's required for investors if they wish to establish a facility like this in Alaska. So I want to thank everyone for their testimony, their questions, and the answers that have been given. And we'll now set an amendment deadline of 5 p.m. on Tuesday, April 25th, for House Bill 143. Excuse me.
Mr. Chair, do you mind if I just make a few comments?
All right. Mr. Jepson, please put your name on the record and make your comments.
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Chairman McKay. I just kind of want to just clear something up for the record is that on many of those slides that the Representative Mears presented, it had the phrase, the DEC says this is not necessary. My talking with the DEC is that is not what they said. They don't believe it's up to them to say whether or not policy is necessary or unnecessary. They believe that they can currently regulate an advanced recycling facility, and Representative Mears of the opinion it's unnecessary, but the decision makers and the investors and the industry experts that we've talked to have made it very clear that it is necessary if you want to see the investment dollars flow into the state for the projects. Another thing to touch on is that Representative Mears' presentation, she talked about solid waste and how exempting advanced recycling is giving them an unfair advantage. The way the advanced recycling industry works today is that they don't take the solid waste, right, when it's thrown into a landfill or when it's thrown away. That material is cleaned, it's sorted, and then it arrives at the advanced recycling facility. So there's sort of the argument to why it's not technically solid waste. And one last thing I would leave off on is that the public testifier who said that advanced recycling is 50 to 100 times more polluting to the environment, I kind of want to echo what Craig said in that is just not a reliable study or reliable data. We have multiple life cycle assessments that show the exact opposite, and that when you compare making plastic from the advanced recycling process, it is better for the environment and lower emissions than using crude oil to make virgin plastics. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jepson. So I would also mention that people can submit written testimony on HB 143 to house.resources@akledge.gov. Okay, I remember that correctly. All right, thank you very much. Again, I was going to say that we'll set an amendment deadline for 5 p.m. on Tuesday, April 25th, and I will hold HB 143 in committee. All right, thank you very much. We will now move to House Bill 98. Which is the state ownership of submerged lands. So I bring that HB 98 back before the committee. My goal for today is to take public testimony on HB 98 and discuss any concerns there may be with the bill. So I'll now open public testimony on HB 98. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on HB 98? Is there anyone online? There is. Three. Okay. Got to reset. Okay. We now are in public testimony for HB 98, and our first testifier looks like Craig Campo from Fairbanks. Craig, can you hear me all right?
I can. Thank you.
Okay, Craig. Please state your name and your affiliation. And let's have testimony 2 minutes, okay?
You bet. Yeah, my name is Craig Campo, C-O-M-P-E-A-U. We run a 77-year-old family business in Fairbanks. I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I'm a 62-year resident of Alaska. 62 years seems like a long time. And really consider how long we've been watching these federal agencies juggle and manipulate their definitions of navigability regarding the submerged lands under state ownership. That's ownership that was given to Alaska at statehood. And in all that time, the feds have recognized just 9% of these rivers under the navigable designation. There's almost a million miles of rivers in Alaska, and only 9% have been designated as navigable, dating back to when the Boeing 707 jetliner first came into service. Now, I know healthcare is improving and people are living longer than ever before, but if my math is correct, at the current rate, I'd have to make it to almost 700 years of age to see this process to completion. For sure, my grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren won't even see half of our rivers get their designation correctly identified if we're to wait for these agencies to get the job done. But it really never should have been up to them, specifically after 1959. It's time we as a state finally said enough is enough. As all of you are aware, the landmark unanimous sturgeon decisions have not changed the mindset of the agenda-driven agencies like the National Park Service and others hell-bent on slowing the process to meet their objectives. And that is to control, redefine, and outright steal everything Alaskans fought for and wanted statehood. No changes have been made to the NPS regulations on hovercraft in Alaska, even after the unanimous decisions from the Supreme Court, years after it passed. 2023 can be the year we finally do it, the year we said we're mad as hell and not going to take it anymore. You as a body need to, in no uncertain terms, make clear with this legislation that we're finally taking control of what we were promised at statehood, and that is simple. 100% ownership interest in all submerged lands underlying navigable waters, including those in federal areas. We have been playing nice, like Alaskans are known for over six decades, and now it's our turn. This bill will allow the state of Alaska, under the DNR commissioner, to do what the Fed has completely and intentionally failed to do, determine in a timely and responsible fashion the names and locations of those waters deemed clearly navigable using legal and accepted descriptions of navigable water, including those within the boundaries of and adjacent to federal areas. We've been sharing pins in deep water for too long. I thank this body for your time and service, and on behalf of myself, as well as my future great-great-grandchildren, I support this bill. Thank you. And thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Campo. You made your position very clear. Thank you very much, and have a great day. Okay, now we have Mr. Jim Walker. Excuse me? He's just for questions. Okay, thank you, Jim. Kim Reitmeier. Kim, can you hear me okay?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Kim Reitmeier, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony. We're trying to limit it to 2 minutes, please.
Wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, good afternoon, Chair McKay and members of the committee. My name is Kim Reitmeier, and I'm the president of the ANCSA Regional Association, or ARA. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today. We appreciate the urgency you face on this legislation, as well as the many pressing deadlines you have leading up to the end of the legislative session. ARA represents the 12 Alaska Native regional corporations created by Congress under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or ANCSA, of 1971. Together, these organizations are responsible for supporting the economic, social, and cultural well-being of more than 160,000 Alaska Native shareholders that are a vital part of our state's economy, philanthropic community, and culture. Through ANCSA, the federal government returned 44 million acres of land to be held in Alaska Native ownership through our Alaska Native Regional and Village Corporations. Included within these 44 million acres are many submerged lands. We recognize and applaud your work on HB 98 and SB 92, the state's ownership of submerged lands. However, we encourage the House Resource Committee to allow time for private landowners like ANCs to work with the Department of Natural Resources to ensure this proposed legislation does not cause unintended consequences to private landowners like our Alaska Native Corporation. Together, DNR and members of ARA are working diligently and quickly to address these issues, and several productive conversations have taken place and are selected in the near future. Land rights claims are complex issues, and the historic tie between Alaska Native people and our land amplifies our desire to ensure that we take time to get HB 98, SB 92 right for all Alaskans. We look forward to further discussions on this proposal, and we are committed to work with DNR expeditiously to ensure we have the best legislation for Alaska. Thank you for your work on behalf of Alaska and consideration of this legislation. Together, we can continue to advocate for a better and more prosperous future for our Alaska Native shareholders, our Alaska Native people, and all Alaskans. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Reitmeier, for your testimony. Next, I have Mr. Mike Tinker. Mike Tinker, can you hear me okay, Mike?
I'm here, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Please state your name, your affiliation, and begin your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, sir. My name is Mike Tinker. I came to Alaska just after statehood. I live in Esther, Alaska, where I'm, my wife and I are retired, and we have been here all that time in between. I really applaud this legislation clarifying what has become a deliberate overreach of the federal government, especially with navigable waters, by forcing us to try to take one water body at a time and adjudicate it, and not going into a system like this bill does, which we have, from our family, advocated that the state do for a long time, similar to what we've done with our roads and trails, historic trails, where we have a network that we claim as state, and that gives us something to start from. The equal footing doctrine is mentioned to allow us to use the navigability definitions as other states have done, and that has not happened. The federal government has held us to different standards, going back to the first test case on the Gulfcana River, where I provided input to that case. There are similar cases from the U.S. Supreme Court. One is Dinkum Sands that make it absolutely clear that it matters not if the uplands are owned by the federal government, the waters are still owned, and the lands under them are still owned by the state. As Craig said, the John Sturgeon case, where he received two unanimous decisions from the U.S. Supreme Court, has yet to change a single regulation from the Park Service. Similar to the legislative approval for highways, rights of way, and the maps of the RS-2477s, I really urge you to consider this legislation as important for the state of Alaska. Note that it is only where federal lands abut the waterways, not private lands. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today and wish you all well.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Tinker, and thank you for your testimony. I have one more, Carol Rushmore. Carol, can you hear me okay?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can, Carol. So please state your name and your affiliation and begin your two-minute testimony. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you to the chair and committee for letting me testify today. I appreciate it. I'm Carol Rushmore, the Economic Development Director for the City and Borough of Wrangell. We support HB 98 in order to formalize the rights of Alaskans to use state waterways for recreation, subsistence, and for economic development opportunities without issues with the federal government. So Wrangell is located in central southeast at the mouth of the Stikine River. It's a transboundary waterway stretching 400 miles into Canada. The Stikine River is located in the Stikine-LeConte wilderness area of Tongass National Forest, and the waterway is just one river in our area that's relevant and why it's important for passing this bill. The Stikine River and its multiple sloughs is a subsistence area for Wrangellites. It's a playground, but it's also a key asset for economic opportunity. Thousands of visitors enjoy the breathtaking scenery and the wildlife every summer on charter trips to Shakes Glacier and other river destinations. There used to be ongoing issues with permitting and access with the Forest Service. And several operators were really knowledgeable and fought the Forest Service on the issues to continue the access, but it was not very easy for them. In 2005, the state filed an application with BLM for a federal disclaimer of interest in the waterways, which was not finally approved until 2019, after denials and appeals. The potential length of time to get determinations on waterways that already belong to the state hampers the rights of citizens to continue to use these waterways for access, recreation, subsistence, and economic opportunity. This bill is important to formalize the status of state waterways and start the federal process for acknowledging them, but the time involved could hurt residents. We're working with DNR staff to make sure that the navigable waterways within Wrangell area and utilized by us are on this list or subsequent list. We've already identified one that was inadvertently omitted but has historical use and navigability, and we encourage the state to improve this bill to formalize the rights of Alaskans to enjoy their waterways unhampered. Thank you very much for your time today.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Rushmore, for your testimony. We appreciate it very much. So in the other body, Senate Bill 92, I understand, is the companion to HB 98. Representative Sadler, we understand that there were certain actions taken today and yesterday and today in the other body. Can you discuss the concerns and changes that arose in the other body's resource committee regarding HB 98?
Thank you. Certainly, for the record, it's Representative Sadler. As the sponsor of HB 98, I appreciate the committee having public testimony. I was encouraged by what I heard. And I certainly like the chance to briefly note the progress and status of this bill and of the companion bill. In the Senate side of things, there were some pretty brief things. There were some concerns raised about one particular water body, which is the Mendenhall Lake, which is out there at the mouth of the Mendenhall Glacier in southeast Alaska. The concern is that lake is under current litigation, and as such, we believe it should be taken. That water body can be taken out of the list, that long 82-page list of the water bodies. And at the conclusion of that litigation, that water body can be included in that list again when the next report is issued, or it can be left out, depending on the results of the litigation. It's not our desire to get that hung up. This is descriptive, not proscriptive. Second, there were some concerns expressed, as we heard from Ms. Reitmeier, about the possible effects of this legislation on private property. There are amendments being fashioned. I'm not exactly sure if they were done in resources or where, but I think it's going to be in Senate resources, that explicitly say that this bill does not affect private property. And even goes even further to explicitly talk about the potential of private property in holdings inside conservation system units. So that language is also going to be in the version that comes over from the Senate. If it's necessary to add that to this bill, to HB 98 on our side, we can certainly do that. And there's third, just some minor typographical underlinings where it should be italicized, that kind of typographical thing. I'm looking forward to the continued progress. I appreciate the chance to take your public testimony and to get this on the record.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Reverend Sadler, for the information that you've shared with us. Are there any other additional questions or concerns that members would like to discuss on HB 98? All right, seeing none, I'm holding HB 98 in committee until the Senate companion arrives. If members would like to offer amendments, please draft them to the Senate version, which again is SB 92. Okay? All right. In closing, then, is there any other business other than to thank Representative Armstrong and Representative Rauscher for joining us online? I want to wish everyone a very happy weekend and Earth Day. We all celebrated in different ways, but it's Earth Day. Okay, so seeing no other business, the next committee meeting will be held at 1 o'clock on Monday, April 24th, and this meeting is adjourned at 2:04 p.m. Thank you.